Hello and welcome to The Loop. In this episode of our Generative AI series, we're going to look at the risks associated with using this technology. We're going to think about how regulation could shape the way businesses use generative artificial intelligence and how the technology itself evolves. So joining me today is Sheila Pancholi, a technology risk assurance partner at RSM UK, and Field Fisher US managing partner Mark Webber. So Sheila and Mark, welcome and thank you for joining me. We're sat here in early January 2024. And at the risk of sounding a bit down and grumpy, we're going to talk about the risks around generative artificial intelligence. We're mindful there are lots and lots of upsides and opportunities, but actually, as we kind of navigate this technology, certainly finding lots and lots of areas to think about. So, you know, what general generative artificial intelligence risks are you seeing in your work and with your clients?
Yeah, thank you, Ben. I think it's very much contextual. We've got clients who are building their own Gen AI. We've got a lot more that are incorporating Gen AI into their products. And then there's a whole user base that are just using and experiencing Gen AI that's being brought to them from other third parties. So you've got to look through the lens and work out where you are. Let's put aside those who are building, because there are, you know, probably only 20, 25 businesses building right now. Those that are incorporating and those that are buying in to use it themselves are really faced with supply chain issues. And it's actually quite a traditional issue to think about. Yeah, what am I buying? Who am I buying it from? How does it perform? What assurances do I get from this technology? So there's a whole set of approach which you need to think about, relying on something that's brought to you by something else. And we saw that with the OpenAI kind of fun and games in November and December. Suddenly, a number of businesses are relying on something which is a new and emerging business which has its own governance issues. And we're already talking to businesses about maybe scaling across other operators and other providers, so they maybe got some kind of continuity protection. So yeah, I think you have to think about it through a relatively traditional lens. But then there's the, I've purchased it, I'm giving it to my teams, my employees, and then going on to think about, maybe I'm making this available to others. And at that stage, you really need to think about what's going in, what we call the inputs, and what's coming out, and the outputs, and the reliance on that. And I suspect we might go a little deeper on that. But yeah, that's the early perspective I think I'd give you, Ben.
It's funny, isn't it? Because when we think about supply chain, we typically think about, you know, cargo ships and the Suez Canal, or, you know, what's going on in global areas where we manufacture. But then we're talking about a completely different thing, but using the same terminology, and it makes lots of sense. I mean, Sheila, like, you know, generative artificial intelligence has been around for more than a year, but in Jan 2024, it's fair to say we're probably a year into it being in public awareness. So have you seen any new risks or areas being discussed more and more in your work with our clients?
Interesting one, Ben, because as you say, it has been around for a long time, particularly in some markets and industries, longer than probably most of us would even consider. I think just picking up on something Mark said, it's almost something new, but thinking about some traditional controls and processes around that sort of shiny new thing that we all want to now sort of rush forward and use. So the kinds of things that come to mind for me are, have we got the right and the necessary controls implemented to ensure that, you know, from a business perspective, the investments that are being delivered are right in terms of business results, but whilst also thinking about privacy and confidentiality, and, you know, I think that's a big area in itself, thinking about sort of the lack of adoption of some well-known principles such as security by design, privacy by design, ethical by design, which is becoming much more of an interesting area as we sort of start to adopt artificial intelligence. But concepts which actually, if they're not managed effectively, could lead to quite a lot of exposure and, you know, a huge risk of data being used for, and, you know, training of models being adopted. And I think finally, Ben, you know, security technology really needs to keep pace with the development of generative AI.
There's just so much to unpick, isn't there? I mean, I've not come across the term ethics by design. Would you mind kind of unpicking that? Because that sounds really interesting. And
yeah, I mean, this is thinking about, well, what are we actually using Gen AI for? Have we considered what we're doing with the model or the technology actually ethical? And particularly when it comes to the type of data that we're going to be using with these models as well. Is it okay for us to be potentially considering modeling using certain types of sensitive personal identifiable data? But also, where is that actually going to end up? Is it going to be out in the public domain? And is it okay for that to be out in the public domain? Particularly because there's a lot of questions over actually what happens with these models. Will it actually end with results that are even accurate? And I think, you know, that is a subject area in itself, the whole sort of accuracy of what Gen AI is actually delivering.
To repeat the point earlier, it's not a new technology in a sense. It didn't just appear in Jan 2024 from nowhere. It did exist, but it's very much on the radar. And I know, like in our talk with clients, we surveyed businesses and found an overwhelming proportion by September of business leaders and founders felt that they understood what generative artificial intelligence was. And we felt if you'd asked that question a year before, they would have said, we don't know what you're talking about. So it's in the public awareness. But what are the experience of like early adopters? What are people stumbling over and finding? I kind of put that to both of you, Sheila and Mark.
We're seeing a number of things. There are those that are consciously going into the adoption of Gen AI and going out on that procurement strategy, implementing, putting in their, you know, tentative assessments of policy and doing some training and kind of running with it. But many, many other adopters are finding actually they have a whole vendor suite, yet those vendors are incorporating AI, including Gen AI, and bringing the AI to the business almost through the back door. I've been running this software for the last 3 years. Suddenly it's now got Gen AI. You've got a system there where, you know, it wasn't planned. It was a bit of a surprise. And sometimes you get a choice as an admin to turn it on or provision it. We're then finding with those kind of businesses that we're working with, the insufficiency of current policy, definitely insufficiency of education and really helping to guide and help the business and employees within the business make the most of AI. There's some have the knee-jerk reaction, just turn it off and ban it, but gradually it's crept back in. You know, Sheila touched on, you know, impact and that word impact. And, you know, we're finding policy guides, but you also have to think about what tools you're putting in the hands of the business and sometimes your customers. So there's an emerging practice in the world of governance, and particularly, you know, we'll see it may even be mandated by law in time, of, you know, a process of impact assessment. Essentially something, you know, it's come out of things like privacy. I'm a, you know, GDPR privacy lawyer. If you, you know, do something which has a high risk to personal data, you have to conduct a data protection impact assessment. If you're going to, you know, launch AI within your business, good governance and good practice is to conduct an AI impact assessment, which is partly looking at the some of the privacy issues and confidentiality issues that Sheila was talking about, but also wider impacts to the business and you know, what it means to myself and the business that I'm working in, but also what it means to others, and thinking a little bit more existentially about what others impact there may be. And that's where we start getting to ethics and other kind of things. And then once you've thought about that risk, you can then implement controls. And some of those may be your traditional controls. You have a security policy, you have an acceptable use policy, but there may be additional controls that you want to put in place, having considered it and considered the impact through that kind of impact assessment.
It's almost that playing catch up. Traditionally, if you were going to implement new technology, you would consider the risks and the governance requirements up front, and it would be security by design and privacy by design. But it's almost as if early adopters are playing catch up with those things. And, you know, I'm not suggesting it's always an afterthought, but it's certainly coming secondary to actually implementing. And, you know, those risks are quite broad as well. You know, Mark, you mentioned data privacy. Yes, there are data risks, but there are also risks around the generative AI models. There's risks around people. There's infrastructure risks. So, you know, the risks are far broader and need a lot of consideration, even if it is coming after adopting Gen AI.
I just wonder, how on earth do you stay on top of it all when it feels like there's so much to do and it's so fast moving? Like, what guiding principles are we seeing where businesses are successful in running as fast as the issues are arising?
It a different view across different markets and different industries. So, you know, some industry sectors absolutely a little bit more developed in this area. Others definitely are looking for quite a lot of guidance and support and not really sure where to start because, as you say, it's broad, it's complex. But going back to those sort of basic principles, you know, policies and procedures, governance, risk assessments, you know, thinking about continuous evaluation and monitoring, setting up processes, particularly monitoring around infrastructure. And actually a big piece is around awareness. So encouraging responsible use of Gen AI and discouraging malicious or unethical applications for generative AI. I really, I think, being able to embed those basic principles.
I guess same thoughts to you, Mark, but it'd be useful to understand what you're seeing. You're based in California, working with, you know, Californian businesses by and large. Like, is there anything we're seeing on your side of the Atlantic that might be different to what me and Sheila are seeing here in the UK?
I think there are a few changes in that we've had AI for longer and a number of businesses have been using AI internally or developing it for a while. The one thing I think we're realizing and businesses are realizing is the complexity that Sheila alludes to means you need to bring together different parts of the business to make AI work. So, you know, historically, the privacy lawyers have thought about privacy. Security's had a budget to go and do its security and cyber things. HR's just run along and done their HR functions. But actually, you know, a lot of good governance and best practice is starting to bring those different silos together and make them work together. And that's one of the big challenges. That's definitely recognized in some of the guidance that we're seeing. And we are getting some pretty good guidance. I think we'll go on to talk about US regulation, but you know, there's best practice out there from Canadian regulators through to NIST, the American organization, and even out to Singapore, where you know there's been a lot of guidance coming out with best practice. So we're sort of overwhelmed with what's good. It's about cherry picking some of that, and we're actually finding some fairly sophisticated programs coming together. You know, committees, organizational committees, sometimes reporting up to boards, but really thinking about good AI and good implementation of AI, a steering group comprising a body of different interested parties, partly looking over the shoulder of the business as it runs fast, but also partly guiding and helping with sensible implementation and borrowing various principles along the way. And I think that's working well. And there is a level of real sophistication out here, you know, led by people who had the initiative to bring something together and been empowered. But that empowerment has often come from the top with the right kind of sponsorship. And I think for boards and directors that are listening, thinking about how you support and how you give time to individuals to go on that kind of journey is particularly important. So
you mentioned security, actually, Mark, and I was going to ask you and Sheila about this. I've got a couple of questions about cybersecurity. My turn to Sheila, just to ask you a kind of opening question. In terms of cyber, are we expecting, you know, generative AI to kind of create a boon or a change? Are we seeing criminals use it in their work against businesses?
I think we are expecting an increase in cybersecurity as a result of Gen AI. And again, this goes back to some early adoption, but also potentially a lack of consideration of the security and controls that need to be in place prior to that, Ben. And again, just the sheer complexity of it all, there's probably quite a lot of education that needs to be done in terms of what does good look like. So absolutely, organizations are going to be having to think about building the adoption of Gen AI into the security principles and, you know, certainly considering from a cybersecurity perspective. I mean, Mark, you made reference to the NIST framework, which is a US Department of Defense-led framework for cybersecurity, but it actually is very globally accepted. And I know there's been a recent revision to that to take into account some of the requirements around Gen AI. But also, actually, if you think about it from a regulatory perspective broader, the regulatory landscape is already very, very complex. And when you start to try and overlay that with what else will be needed from a Gen AI perspective, it could become increasingly complex. So, you know, just to give you an example, applying generative AI in something like something simple, everyday use consumer lending, actually, it's going to require compliance with a whole array of other standards and rules that are already in place, which, you know, is going to add another layer of complexity. We've got to be thinking about that in addition to, okay, well, you know, how do we safeguard everything from increasing cyber risks? Because there will be increasing cyber risks.
Mark, have you got any kind of thoughts around security and cyber risks?
To be honest, we've not seen many that have resulted from Gen AI. Certainly seen, you know, more sophisticated phishing attacks. What I am seeing, which is interesting, is a lot of use of AI to protect against cyber use. And, you know, a number of the businesses we're working with, now there's an ability to process much wider data sets, look at real-time intrusions and look at compromises and sort of fight some of the security risks with AI, which is very powerful. But understanding how that works and also understanding some of the complexity and risk around that, you know, if you're going to look at every transaction and every exchange and every server connection and every email within a business, that's fantastic and powerful. But it also can amount to employee monitoring, and it can amount to other kinds of compromise. When you bring new technology to solve a problem, you open up new doors, and particularly, you know, again, another supply chain issue, which often comes with bringing a third party in to protect and defend your systems. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Mark. We've certainly seen organizations who've ramped up various detection countermeasures, building endpoint detection and response, so sort of EDR types of platforms using generative AI to identify and detect anomalies with few to no false positives. So, you know, using Gen AI in a very sort of positive way to protect against cybersecurity as well.
Mark, we want to talk about regulation, which is a big topic, possibly the biggest topic, and some would argue the most hottest topic. Are you able to start us off with a sort of helicopter view of where we are? What does the regulatory landscape look like as we sit here in January 2024 around Gen AI?
Yeah, around Gen AI specifically, there is very little, in fact, no Gen AI specific law anywhere. Maybe the state of New York's got something around hiring of individuals, but that specific law, that's not to say there's not a whole lot of law which applies to the use of generative AI. We've mentioned privacy, we've mentioned security laws, there are a whole lot of rules around confidentiality and intellectual property use. So we're actually just fighting and pulling together an awful lot of law and applying that to new circumstances. There are, you know, conceptual issues around product liability and protections and different rights that could arise from legislation. And there's no doubt there are tweaks, you know, within the world of intellectual property. There are some great philosophical debates about whether, you know, Gen AI is capable of creating a patent, or whether it's, you know, really a registrable, you know, copyright as an output when it's been created by a machine. And they're the kind of things that we'll see play out and we'll tweak, particularly in the US, and that will have influence elsewhere. But as we stand, no Gen AI law. There's been a bit of a fight to be the first to come up with some Gen AI law, or at least some AI law. And there's been the sort of much trailed EU AI Act. You know, Brussels for the last 4 years has been looking to regulate. Of course, you know, as an English lawyer, you know, that's now going to fall outside of the remit of the UK, and we can talk to what the UK is doing. But Brussels has been very interested in, you know, almost having, yeah, being first to market with law to influence the world. You know, just before Christmas, they reached a, quote, political agreement, quote, and have some kind of law on the books. But you know, that there's quite a lot of, you know, thrashing out and finalization. We still don't see the final draft of that. And we'll see some of that start to bite late this year, and a lot of it biting 2 years after it's implemented. But I think generally speaking, unless you're a Gen AI developer, that's not going to bite. So anyone, you know, maybe those incorporating it may need to take assurances from that Gen AI developer to explain how they're using Gen AI down the stream. But it doesn't really apply to the use of AI, all of that law. And it, you know, it probably applies to around 10% of the AI that's taking place globally. So we can talk a little bit about, you know, how that works, if you like. It, at the same time, and not to be outdone, the UK has focused in on AI risk, but really taking the approach that we probably don't need one you know, new holistic law. We just need to tweak our regulations and help our regulators implement the law that we've got. And I think it's a more, yeah, probably AI friendly, simpler approach, but it hasn't answered all the questions we've got about what regulation might look like. But I think it's going to be easier to operate in the UK because of that. And then in the US, we've got elections coming, and you'll be aware that it's very hard for Congress to pass any law to even fund itself right now. So there's very little chance of centralized AI law or legislation, although that's probably needed. Instead, we've seen President Biden come out with some different orders around improving safety, improving security, and a number of transparency issues and standards. And, you know, really looking at what best practice will look like, leaning on organizations to be responsible and to comply with some principles, sometimes on a voluntary basis. So I actually think, you know, because it aligns so much with best practice, because it aligns with some of the things that the NIST organization, I actually think that may have more of an impact on us globally, because this is where a number of the developers are and this is where a lot of the AI is coming from. The EU may have missed a trick in this instance.
Is there a risk with the EU that they've almost tried to create the regulation before the product?
Definitely the case. The law was proposed and, you know, conceived 4 years ago, before Gen AI was really a thing. And then they responded in the last, you know, almost hours of negotiation to kind of thrash out some kind of compromise. So while you've got over 100 pages on regular AI, there's almost a two-page addenda which deals with the Gen AI issue. So it really is an afterthought. But, you know, for all the hype, it probably applies to 10% of AI that's out there. And most of the time, it's actually prohibiting a lot of things which it sees as, you know, unacceptable. So things that violate fundamental rights, manipulation of sentiment, you know, real-time policing, using facial recognition, building facial recognition databases. To be honest, all worth addressing, but the sort of thing that really goes to overextending government use of technology, or really stopping things that really shouldn't be happening in the first place. And then there's other tiers as they come down, looking at high risk and low and minimal risk AI. High risk and AI will be permitted, but with a number of compliance steps. But if I look back over the last couple of years of AI projects I've done, it's, you know, it's a handful of things that are impacted by this. So nothing that really impacts the use of AI by people who aren't building it or training it themselves. And of course, 2 years off, and who knows where we've gone in the next 2 years, seeing what's happened in the last 12 months. They'll be trumpeting and excited about it, but I don't think it is the significant thing we all see it is. Where we draw best practice and where we learn from some of that and do things on a voluntary basis will be far more interesting, in my view.
And actually, globally, a number of different countries that will go through various elections. When we talk about regulation from a government perspective, a huge amount of potential regime change globally, which piles uncertainty into this area. Sheila, what's your take on regulation? It's a big topic. How do you think about it? How do you approach it?
It is a big topic. Picking up on Mark's comments, it shouldn't be about bringing in lots of wieldy new regulation. It really should be about developing and considering changes to existing regulation to take into account what we're now doing with the use of Gen AI or what we might be doing in the future. So I think we've seen a little bit of that coming through. So, you know, federal healthcare regulators, if you think about the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, they've been advancing existing guidelines, but for the use of AI. And then, you know, you've got sort of other states also considering regulating data and AI, and, you know, that might be rolled out wider to other businesses. I guess coming from our role as advising organizations on what does good governance and risk management look like, from my perspective, it would be good if there was regulation which would drive some change on the use of Gen AI, but to the point where actually Gen AI becomes trusted, i.e., you know, you can use it safely, securely, and resiliently. Having strong risk management processes driven by regulation to ensure that the adoption of Gen AI is, you know, it's done very, very effectively, so that you've got use that's fair, you know, it's not harmful without bias, it's valid, and, you know, the output is reliable, accountable, and transparent. So, you know, just again, just very much around sort of driving good governance.
Mark, you kind of talked about the UK a little bit, and it sounded for me as a non-lawyer almost like a decentralized kind of approach, if that makes sense. Isn't there a risk around that, that when you have a technology that's moving so fast and has kind of well-publicized, let's call them kind of doom case scenarios, that if you have that approach, it creates too much risk at the benefit of potential innovation?
There is a risk if the use of a technology goes completely unchecked. I agree. Mm. But I think I would argue if you go back to the laws that are there, we're not without those checks and balances. So I'm a European UK privacy lawyer predominantly in Silicon Valley, and GDPR, and the UK has the GDPR, bumps into almost every project we have in the world of AI. So we're not without that underlying check and balance. It's not like it's a free for all. I think what it appeals to me about a decentralized approach is you can look at things specifically without this sort of broad brush horizontal approach. You know, if we're interested in output from a chatbot, I can see broad AI rules saying you must disclose that you're using a chatbot. I want to know that I'm dealing with an AI and not a human. That's the kind of principled, you know, AI, but it's also good practice. It's already, you know, there for some. But I'd far rather have a set of specific rules from an organization that's specifically thinking about chatbot regulation than I would thinking about somebody who's worried about, you know, healthcare at one area and, you know, policing in the other area and military application. The problem with a broad brush is you spend a lot of time talking about, you know, maintaining technical documentation, running conformity assessments, preserving the right to audit, but not actually getting in the detail of what may happen. What every country needs is some extra thought around liability, you know, and what can happen if AI goes wrong. And that's partly a consumer protection issue, you know, protecting consumers from harm, but it's also building upon some of these uncertainties. If somebody has stolen my entire database to train their AI, I'm not recompensed. What happens to that? Can I prevent that? Can I put a simple flag on my website as a content producer which says, don't scrape my website to make sure my copyright and intellectual property is protected? Those kind of additional steps, I believe, are best thought about by individual regulators that are specialists in a field and are more likely to be come about rather than doing something on a large and a holistic level, I would suggest. So I think it is actually an area where I think the UK is pitching it right. And of course, the UK is also seeing this as partly a Brexit dividend because they can be different to what the EU is doing and maybe more permissive, etc., around the use of AI. Whether that works, whether it doesn't, it is open for some debate, but I suspect the UK is going to be far more aligned with, you know, what the US is doing in this instance. So
how does a business ensure they protect themselves whilst also experimenting with these tools? I don't know, Sheila, if you've got any thoughts around that question and guiding principles, great ideas, or I don't know, even things just to absolutely avoid at all costs.
Yeah, I think maybe if we start, you know, from the sort of cyber perspective, Ben, automating, updating, upgrading cybersecurity, obviously a key principle. There's quite a lot that sits under that. Things like continuously assessing access privileges, thinking about continuously evaluating the actual models' vulnerabilities could be open to adversarial types of attacks in different domains, you know, using what we're seeing coming through now, emerging evaluation toolkits as well. More from a control and governance perspective, almost going back to the beginning of a conversation, you know, applying the basic principles again, policies and procedures, good governance, risk assessments, continuous evaluation and monitoring, processes for monitoring your infrastructure, and really building that environment of awareness, encouraging responsible use, discouraging malicious or unethical applications of Gen AI. A lot in there, Ben, but they are, you know, basic principles that should apply across any technology landscape.
All this conversation leads me to the question of if you were going to sit with, you know, a board or with a founder, CTO, someone in the C-suite, you know, what are the key things to think about around risk and regulation? Sheila, we've talked about a lot, but what sort of things would you put top of the boardroom agenda if you had time with one of our clients or with a prospect?
I would suggest, Ben, really spending some time considering what your application of GenAI is going to be and how you're going to manage it, which is GenAI is being adopted and the risks are being considered afterwards. So I think thinking about it the other way around, again, having a clear strategy for the adoption of GenAI and thinking through sort of the governance principles as part of that. So going back to a comment Mark made earlier on, doing those assessments, we're good at doing privacy and risk assessments when we're adopting or thinking about other types of changes and transformation in business. So just consider this as another one of those, but a very important one.
Mark, same question to you. What are the I'll call them top tips? It makes it sound too simple, but what sort of things would you be putting top of the agenda?
Well, there are a lot of top tips. And yeah, going to Sheila's point, this is contextual. So understanding and just taking a moment when you're going fast, what am I doing with this generative AI? And I think at a board level, asking question, what's going in and should it be going in? And if it is going in, is the provider learning from my data and training on my data? Am I maybe being compromised? Are they just catching that my data via the back door and am I protecting that? So thinking about that from a proprietary perspective, but then also what's coming out and how's that being used? And there are some things that come out in, I work at a law firm, we have marketing content, blogs, we're happy with that. Actual client advice, has it got human review? Are we careful with that? Are we trusting what comes out? And then it really comes down to, do I have enough business control and policy around what's going in and what's going out? But realizing that control and policy is one thing, you've actually just got to educate those that are doing it. So an awareness, because your best protection for your business is making sure that individual in Cheltenham isn't putting it in the first place. You can have all the policy you want, but are they aware? And then in the same way, it's Friday, I'm moving fast. Have I just cut a corner? But is that kind of corner going to hurt the business? So again, awareness and support and, rather than prohibiting and preventing, helping people and guiding people within an organization to understand what good would look like. And there's an awful lot of trickle down of awareness and education.
Mark, Sheila, thank you so much. Really insightful. For anyone listening who'd like to know more about generative artificial intelligence, please do take a look at our website. We'll put a link into the show notes. And please keep an eye out for further episodes of The Loop, where we'll continue to investigate the impact of GenAI on businesses. And thank you very much for listening.